Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Ruckers, and welcome to our rare midweek episode of the podcast. I'm Alex Lowe, and we've got a packed show coming up today. Conrad Smith joins us. Jess Hayden's on to talk about huge news in the women's game. In the studio with me today is Alan Dimmock, and there is an empty seat in the studio, Al.
Yeah, it's kind of eerie, actually.
Yeah, is it a bit like that old Have I Got News For You episode? Do we need to put something in there for the missing... Oh, hang on a minute. Is that... Steve, is that you down the line?
No.
So, Stephen Jones was supposed to be here in the studio. He was teed up for it. Steve, where are you?
In Oslo.
Steve is not in the studio, but the wonders of modern technology, he is with us on Zoom down the line. How are you, Steve?
Very well indeed, thank you. Very well indeed.
Al, how are you?
Yes, very good. I've just come back from some time spent in Scotland. I feel refreshed, ready to go. It's autumn.
So have I, actually.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. I was in there for the weekend. I went to Edinburgh, but we took the sleeper train up on Friday. Big adventure for the kids. Edinburgh, 2 days in Loch Lomond, and flew home last night in time to record the pod.
So you took the high road?
Brilliant. I did, yeah.
I went to an old venue that we've all used to attend, the East India Club, last night for the launch of the of Floyd Steadman's excellent new book. And it was a great night because it was like the old days. Loads of people crammed into a room, including the Vunipolas, and a really, really friendly night in which players and press and all sorts mixed. It was a great night, and it's a great book. So that was pleasurable as well. Although I wouldn't say I feel that refreshed this morning.
Is that why you're not in the studio? Have we just uncovered the reason why you're stuck at home?
No, it's not. I just got the day wrong.
Amazing to think that used to be the headquarters of English rugby. That's where the teams were picked. That's where all the big decisions were made in smoky rooms and over whiskies.
That was the headquarters of world rugby.
I'm sure the England team was getting picked there last night as well, but we'll get to that further in the show.
That's where they used to go, and they used to, you know, these days, as you know, boys, they work out what the new laws should be of the scrum by, you know, having farming them out to competitions for trial laws. What they used to have there was, like, Mickey Steele-Bodger of the England rep would take off his jacket, and someone else would take off their jackets, and they'd scrummage in these big hotel corridors, and that's how they got the new law changes, etc., to new laws. They'd scrummage, but they wouldn't take their ties off. They'd just take their jackets off and scrummage in the corridor. You think I'm joking, but I'm not. That's the way you used to do it.
How much of that was going on last night? Macko v Billy.
There was scrummaging. Well, Nick Kane was there, so
quite a lot then.
Let's say scrummaging was back on the agenda last night.
Well, today we're rucking. Coming up next, we'll have a big chat about the autumn and the perennial issue of club v country. So this weekend in Cardiff should be being billed as the Battle of the Hemispheres, the Six Nations champions against the champions of the Rugby Championship, New Zealand. But it isn't being billed like that, and it can't be billed like that, really, because Wales are missing five of their Premiership stars, in addition to the injury and COVID absentees. They won't have Dan Biggar, they won't have Louis Rees-Sammet, They won't have Callum Sheedy, etc., etc. Which brings us back to the perennial conversation about club v country, because there are three Premiership matches, three Premiership derbies happening this weekend, which will also be missing the big name England players. And so we come to the same problem we always have, which is too much rugby, too many clashes, and the big games being undermined by the absence of their stars. Steve, you followed this whole journey of professional rugby through to where we are now. Do you ever see any conclusion to this?
No, and there won't be one, lads, until someone gives ground. And the main point at issue is that unions have to find a way unions have to find a way to balance their books without endlessly searching for more and more and more games. If you remember, only a couple of years ago, they were going to cut them back. There was only going to be two on some tours, etc. They never cut them back. They always are desperate for more of them. Clearly, absolutely clearly, the next step must be to avoid the utter shambles of a Wales-New Zealand game, games that started in 1905, being completely denuded all these years on because they're not flat-out games. That is as an absolute disgrace, and I'm really pleased this time that more and more publicity have been given to that farce of a game. It should not be played. It is simple as that. We do not need to have New Zealand up every year. And because we do, all the glitz and glamour of an All Black, even an All Black jersey is gone. Laughably, we keep on hearing there are always talks going on about the structured season and, oh, we're almost there, etc. And we're all talking together. rubbish.
We should clarify that the situation has arisen because this Wales-New Zealand game has been approved by World Rugby outside of the agreed international window, which means those players who are contracted to their clubs in England are committed to playing for their clubs in England and therefore not available. So part of the issue, I think, is World Rugby approving all these games outside the window. We should also add that the Premiership has expanded this season to an extra round, which, Al, I think you were going to come to.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's funny, Steve mentioned give ground. I was thinking about the design of the season as it is. You remember in 2012 when there was that fresco of Jesus that someone tried to retouch and ended up being an absolute disaster? The international season is designed very much the same way. Mm. It's like well-meaning, someone's gone in there with the best intentions. You create a bit of space and then a league goes, oh, look, there's a bit of 3 weeks there. We'll creep up right to the point where it is. So Steve said give ground. Anyone tries to give ground and the other people start encroaching, there needs to be a point where someone goes, yeah, fine, can we get on the same page about this? And it's interesting because it extends both sides as well. So when there's a test window, so for example, the URC, we were told that one of the big selling points of that league is that we'll have more meaningful derbies and test stars will be able to play. Last week we had a derby, but because the Welsh squad were in camp preparing for this New Zealand game this week, we had teams in the URC where Welsh sides didn't have their best players on show because they were all getting ready, hitting pads. And surely that means that everything is getting detracted from. So we've got this interesting scenario where, with the Welsh national team, we've got the clubs suffering because they can't pick the best test players, but Wales can't pick the best test players because they're playing outside of the window. How do you design a season like that?
Well, you never would. I may have mentioned this on the pod a couple of weeks ago, but I spoke to one of the investors into Saracens, who is also the lead partner in the Sharks in South Africa. He works, a lawyer in New York. He works with the owner of the Florida Panthers NHL team, with the Milwaukee Bucks NBA team. And they cannot get their head around how the Sharks could enter the URC, a new competition, with six of their most marketable players off playing for South Africa in another competition. Outside of rugby, it makes no sense. And so you'd never structure it like this because you're undermining everything. You're undermining Northampton, Leicester, Harlequins, Saracens. Harlequins got to play Saracens without, was it four or five England players? But you're also undermining, as Steve just so eloquently put it, you know, 100 plus years of history between Wales and New Zealand. You're undermining that game as well. And additionally, I think the pressure will come. I think the pressure will come from investors into the game, from businessmen outside who will force change because it's undermining everything. There's no value in the current setup. And I wonder if the Japanese club game might be one of the trigger points for that, because Sean McMahon and Samu Karevi are staying to play in Japan for their clubs rather than join up with Australia for matches that are inside the window.
Yeah, absolutely. And what makes that very interesting, I was speaking to some people down under about this yesterday, is the fact that the Japan squad, those two guys both play for Suntory Sun Goliath. The season hasn't started yet. It would be pre-season that they're going back to get into. None of the Suntory Sun Goliath guys that are with the Japanese national team are having to pull out this tour. Shrouded in weirdness, this whole thing. But again, it's become a big talking point down under, and I suppose that's the encouraging thing, if you can tease out a silver lining here somewhere, is that people were talking about this, and the head coaches of the Wallabies has been talking about this, and then we've got people in this hemisphere talking about it as well. So at least we're sort of marrying up in what we're outraged about.
We are. It just feels...
That's a good point. That's a good point, and I agree with that. At least, as I just said, at least it's now coming on the agendas of people not accepting it. But, you know, the Premiership is trying to get into a point apart where they can actually be either profitable or almost profitable, not lose so much money. I mean, Gloucester, Exeter, Harlequin Saracens, Saints Tigers, the East Midlands Derby, with Saints playing well and Tigers top of the table. You've got some huge games here. I mean, Saints could probably got 20,000 into that had they wanted to. And as Al said, I think it's at least people are talking, and outside people are now saying, bloody hell, this can't happen. This is absolutely ridiculous. You don't go to the NFL and say, oh, sorry, boys, we've got 7 players out tonight, because they're playing for America. It's absolute rubbish. And I really think that with outside investment money coming into the game, they have really got to reduce totally their dependence on international matches. England, with respect, Twickenham looks like a gigantic, colossal East End market scene when every sort of penny of it is trying to get money from someone. And it's unedifying. And I'm actually, when you say that Owen Farrell plays less than 1 in 3 games for Saracens, the overlaps are ridiculous. And finally, the IRB, or World Rugby, should have said Regulation 9 applies both ways. You must release your players during it, but there will be no matches outside it.
I'm just going to pick up on something Steve said there as well about players giving their best. Interestingly, so this isn't isolated, because Ireland were also meant to be playing this weekend in the United States, in Las Vegas, in the Vegas Cup, completely collapsed because of, quote, insurmountable logistical challenges. But this is something that they want to do every single year going forward. They want to make this an event that happens every year. Now, this is all sorted out by a marketing company that works with the All Blacks and Ireland. Interestingly, I was speaking to Rory O'Connor from the Irish Indo last night, and he was saying that whatever happens, that tour would have been to blood young guys and give them a go. Fair enough. But actually, there's a fear now, apparently, behind closed doors, that some of the Irish players, in terms of test standard, are going to be undercooked by the time they get to play a test against Japan, because they haven't had that game. So it's an interesting one where it's almost like the test teams are looking at these extra games completely differently from where we are. And they might be the people that aren't on the same page as the rest of us.
Interesting. I think another factor in this, and that they stay deliberately below the radar, but CVC are partners in the United Rugby Championship. They're partners in the Premiership, and they're partners in the Six Nations, who oversee these autumn tests as well. You can't think that they'd be happy with big derbies in both club competitions and big test matches all being impacted by this. So you wonder, you kind of hope actually that behind the scenes they're applying some pressure to find a solution that makes sure that rugby can properly sell itself, that Wales, New Zealand can be sold as properly, genuinely the best team in the North, be the best team in the South.
That'd be lovely. CVC, we keep on using this name, Alex, and what do we think? What else would? How would we describe CVC amongst ourselves in the cup 2 or 3 years they've been around. And my word would be shadowy. They have never once put themselves up to a press conference to so that the rugby media and the rugby public, television, mags, etc., they've never once put themselves up for it. So they are shadowy. So we do not know what the hell they want. We know that they want to make a lot of money out of it, but that's all we know. So until they come up into the public domain and stop creeping around beneath the floorboards, maybe we'll be able, it's always going to be the same. We need to know what CV's plans are and come out and tell us, lads, what you think the season should be, because a lot of it is your money.
Steve, you'll be in Cardiff on Saturday, as will I. What do you expect of the game? Do you fear for Wales?
Well, look, first of all, it has got a bogus feeling. There'll be a lot of prancing about with that stupid hacker. They'll do all that just for the sake of the sponsors and the TV cameras. But it will feel bogus. Wales, the Welsh clubs are in awful form, so no one's not awful, not very good form. So Wales, unless some of these young players who are not affected by the years of defeat come through strongly, in my opinion, I'm sure it's fine. There'll be a lot of people there, although not capacity. But in that match, Alex, there is an awful lot that is bogus and cheap and nasty.
There's an interesting point. We're going to hear from Jess later, but actually, she there was a lot of crowing about, oh, it's going to be a sellout at the Principality. And Jess did an interesting thread yesterday where she basically courted a lot of Welsh amateur clubs who have got their allocation of tickets to say who's got. And it turns out there's loads of tickets available. So if you still think you want to get one and go and watch Wales versus the All Blacks, and let's be honest, you can still get excited about the game. It's still it's still the Six Nations champions versus the most marketable brand in rugby. and an incredible rugby team. Then and you still want to check out Jess's thread and see which local amateur clubs have got an allocation of tickets available, because it turns out there's loads.
And a few days ago, I spoke to Conrad Smith, the former All Blacks centre, who has enjoyed some success playing against Wales at the Principality Stadium, to pick his brains on where the All Blacks are, what he expects of that game, and looking ahead also to France, New Zealand, which is probably the marquee game of the autumn. Conrad, I've been covering England for the last week or so, and there's a lot of talk about where England are in their World Cup cycle, transitioning the team, rebuilding. The All Blacks heading to Europe as rugby championship winners again. Where do you see them to 2 years out from the World Cup?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think there's an exact science as to how teams build into World Cups. I mean, the history of World Cups has shown teams have been in horrible form 12 months out of a World Cup and still managed to win. Other times, they seem to build nicely and get through. But look, I think they'll be happy with the depth in the squad, which is a big thing for all unions. I think now the way rugby's played, and that's nothing new, but the knowledge that injuries do occur and getting through three knockout games, which is what World Cups are all about, is you're going to rely on more than 15 or more than even 23. And I think they have developed some real depth in positions that they probably didn't have even 2 years ago. So that would be the most encouraging thing. And I think that's what they'll test again in the five games that they have on the whole tour, but the four in Europe particularly.
The All Blacks won the Rugby Championship without some senior players who opted out of the bubble in Australia, but a few of them coming back in. Richie Mwanga will be on tour. He's the fly half. Forces Bowden Barrett quite often to play at fullback, who'd be probably the fly half in any other team. As you said, they've got a real embarrassment of riches that they bring north to Cardiff this weekend.
Yeah, and I don't know what the solution will be. I don't think anyone in New Zealand does in terms of that Bodie Barrett, Richie debate at 10. And like you say, there are two players that would you know, they'd get picked in any team. But you're right. I think when you looked at that performance, well, the performances in Australia against South Africa, they were tough tests. And to play, you know, New Zealand are always harsh critics, and, you know, they obviously lost that last test. But they were, there was probably four of their first pick players. When you look at Sam Kane, Sam Whitelock, Bodie. So, you know, I mean, sorry, Richie, who, even if he didn't start, he'd definitely be in the 23 with Bodie, and Aaron Smith. So those guys not being there, they lost, but they played a pretty tough test match. So to then come over, have those guys back in the squad, they'll hopefully be a lot better for it. And they'll need it, you know, in this tour. There's going to be some tough games. It's going to be exciting.
There's a big conversation happening in England at the moment about how England balance their midfield. And, you know, you and Manonu were just the perfect pairing. Do you have a view on, certainly in the modern game, about two playmakers, one playmaker, big ball carriers, or is it just you just have to make do with the best that you have available?
Yeah, that's a difficult question. I get asked it a lot, and I think there's definitely attributes you need out of your midfield, but I think it's wrong to then typecast, you know, your 12 has to do this and he's got to be the ball carrier and your 13 has to do that. I think, you know, the ones that have done it, or the back lines that work well, you know, you have that ability right across a back line. And I'm even, you know, I think of South Africa at the moment, I think they'd have the most balanced back line. Like, since that World Cup, they've virtually had the same seven guys there starting most tests. And the strength of them, I mean, again, you can look at D'Alanda and say he's a ball carrier and Arms a little bit, you know, more of a distributor. But I just think the range of threats they have across that back line, and then you get, just with experience, you get just a real good coordination, and everyone's seeing different things, and there's just a lot of different threats with your kick game, pass game, carry game. And I think as long as you do that, and that's how you sort of pick your midfield. I know it's not really answering your question, but I, you know, to answer it, it's a broader thing. Sure, there's your 12, 13, but how they work with your 10 and 15, obviously the All Blacks, you know, Fozzie's big thing is around a dual playmaker role with your 10, 15. But, you know, sometimes if you've got a 15 that's a real ball carrier, you know, you can look to your 12 to be that playmaker role. So yeah, somewhere in all that, there's an answer, hopefully. But it's obviously this is what coaches debate about, build their careers around.
Somewhere in that is the answer of do England play Manu Tuilagi at 12 or 13. Do you have any standout memories of playing Wales at the Principality Stadium? I had a look back. I wondered if you played in the game that started with a standoff against the Haka, but I don't think you were playing that day, but you were playing a couple of years earlier where you did the Haka in the changing room.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, I get asked my favourite place to play, and that's always, you know, my first answer, that stadium. Just the volume, you know, the Welsh singing, the warm-up, it's just a special place. You literally cannot hear each other on the field, which is a little bit daunting when you first play there, but you learn to love it. You love the challenge. I love the supporters themselves. I mean, they're into you. You know, they're desperate for their team to win, but they also have the, you know, I like to remember, you know, the graciousness when they've watched a good test, and you know, if the All Blacks have won, you know, they'll applaud you off the park, and that's pretty cool. So, yeah, it's you know, a lot of fond memories of a lot of great games there.
And it is technically what it is, the Six Nations champions against the winners of the Rugby Championship. But in some ways, the sort of the marquee fixture of this series is France against the All Blacks over in Paris towards the end of November. Have they made their mark on you guys down there? I mean, they travelled to Australia and with a sort of second, third team, and were engaged in a hell of a series against the Wallabies. Is that a game that's in your diary to look forward to?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you've called it the marquee game. I think it's seen the same down here. And that's no disrespect to the Welsh at all. I think, and, you know, the position in the tour, it's sort of at the end of the tour as opposed to the start. And I know Ian Foster's already sort of said that they'll be using different combinations sort of to prepare themselves almost to replicate a real World Cup to then find their top team for the, you know, the last couple of games, and particularly that French game. That, you know, it's not lost on anyone in New Zealand how well the French are playing, and the French team always hold a special spot for New Zealand rugby supporters.
So your work at the moment is focused on representing the International Rugby Players Association, and I guess your most recent project was bringing in the contact training limits contact training guidance that has been published by World Rugby. Can you talk us through how that came about and why it's so important to at least take a first step and publish some guidance like this?
Yeah, I suppose it came about because there was obviously a concern around the toll that rugby in general was having on players and World Rugby, and obviously, you know, ourselves at International Rugby Players were looking for ways to front foot it and see how to deal with it. And one of those things is obviously sort of starting by looking at trainings, because there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of information being spread, which I don't think was very accurate all the time, but that's the nature of anything, I suppose. Just in terms of contact load and how much was being done at trainings. And, you know, myself as a player that had spent, 15 years almost playing professionally, I knew, you know, that's something you have to consider. Not just the load during games, but spent during the week. And, you know, and so it really started, you know, a project to firstly look at how much contact is going on sort of the Monday to Friday and whether we can limit that in the hope that it would then limit the amount of head contact, but also just body contact that players go through so that they have longer careers and we look after them better. And that was the real motivation for it.
So the guidelines at the moment are 15 minutes of full contact training, which is about 5 or 6 minutes lower than the average that came through in your survey. It's half an hour of live mauling and scrummaging, extras for sort of controlled contact, semi-contact training, which is pad work, and that 40 minutes of pad work and
yeah,
such like.
And that's... The thing was, most of the, you know, again, I speak for myself with an All Black team or a Super Rugby team, even while I, you know, where I finished with at Poe, that was about what those teams all stuck to. And I think it just heightens the, like that 15 minutes, that's full contact in terms of game-like situation. And that's all that most teams would do. And I think the real value from trainings is done in that 40 minutes controlled. And I know myself, particularly from mid-season towards the end of a season, if I'd got through a fair amount of, you know, if I'm playing regularly, I wouldn't need a lot of contact. I wouldn't need many live tackles, but I'd still spend a lot of time, you know, on a pad, getting my footwork right, head placement right, shoulder, lead shoulder, all that, you know, good stuff that you need to do to make sure you don't then get injured in a game, so you're prepared right. But, you know, there's no need, well, for me, there was no need to go through live tackle situations where there's a lot of, you know, things that you're not prepared for, which can cause injuries. You limit that to game day. And then that's what, you know, we found that the big numbers only came from maybe those lower competitions where there's not the same level of education. And this is what the guidelines really is about, educating particularly those lower levels as to what is done at the top level and what you is all you need to do to prepare guys for games.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Great to hear there from Conrad Smith on Wales and the All Blacks this autumn. Let's turn our attention to Scotland. You've been up there recently, Al. Did you gain any sense of excitement about their autumn coming up? They got Tonga this weekend.
Well, yeah, I was speaking to some people behind the scenes about Tonga specifically and what they want out of this game, because it's another game that's outside of the window. It's not what you'd call a tier one test. They've had their issues, which is we'll get to in a minute. But looking at them, cast your mind back, and when Gregor Townsend was on the Lions tour, Mike Blair, who's now head coach of Edinburgh, was due to step in and take charge of a tour to playing Romania and Georgia. And now that was blown apart by COVID, and they never got the chance. But people in the camp are still talking about that. And one of the things that they want to do, I think, with this Tonga game is rewards people for form, but also check out some new talent. So on that, before that summer schedule was blown apart, they were very excited about players like Ewan Ashman, Josh Bayliss, Rory Darge, Luke Crosby, and Rufus McLean. They wanted to blood these guys. They wanted to give them a little taster of what it's like in Test rugby. And then I wouldn't be surprised if we see some of that against Tonga to give these guys a nod and say, right, now's finally your chance. Since that tour, we've also seen guys like Sione Tuipulotu is getting a lot of traction amongst Glasgow fans. People want to see him, see what he can do in a Scotland jersey. And the other thing is if we go to selection and who you're able to pick, well, Scotland have a fly half in France and Scotland have a fly half in England. So if outside of this test window, are we going to see Ross Thompson get a lot of the ball in his hand? Now, he's a young player at Glasgow who people are very excited about to see where he comes from. So there's an element of that, but also the other chat, the piece of chat that keeps coming out of Scotland is 18 months from the World Cup, 18 months from the World Cup. So this feels very much like they're going to be building depth. And if you're going to do it against anyone, it's probably against Tonga to start this one off. Tonga obviously are playing England later in the window. Tonga have selected a team of 40 players with 22 based in France. They've had to basically go cap in hand to France and say, help us out here, because it's out the window. They will not be able to pick, you know, a player won't be able to play all three of their games this November, it feels like. There are some interesting elements to that. So, for example, Lopeti Tamani. Remember, we all talked about Malachi Fekitoa playing in an Olympic qualifier event. Well, Lopeti Tamani has 12 caps to his name for the Wallabies. He, the back rower, played in a sevens qualifying event, now is able to come and play for Tonga. So there are interesting storylines about that. But the most interesting thing, and I'll be interested to get Steve's thought on the whole thing in general, actually, is Totai Kefu, obviously a great player in his time. We may remember early in the year that horrific moment where there was a home invasion that turned violent. Yes. He was stabbed. He had to undergo emergency. Him and his wife had to undergo surgery. They're recovering from that. Obviously, he's not able to come on tour. He has, by all accounts, according to the CEO of the Tongan Rugby Union, played a big hand in selecting the squad, played a big hand in negotiating with the clubs in Europe about who can come in, but not an ideal start. So if Scotland are going to give a go to some young guys and let them gain some test rugby under their belt and maybe even earn their way to playing against Australia, it's the perfect start for them, really.
Do you get any sense of a sort of a Lions benefit for the coaching team who went out there, just in terms of working with the best of Britain and Ireland? Do you think that would have changed anything, infused any new ideas in Gregor Townsend, or is he just going to, I guess, more of the same for Scotland, particularly when Finn Russell comes back?
I mean, certainly it'll solidify in people's minds where their strengths lie. But one of the opportunities that games like this one show you is the strength and depth, because we know any World Cup cycle, and genuinely it's similar. There's a similar thing in Ireland at the moment as well, where apparently the discourse has changed, where a lot of the talk has gone from game to game, week to week, test to test, to looking forward to the World Cup. Everything's designed about looking forward, which is sports people are not want to do usually, but it seems that way from Scotland. So certainly they need, I think, Steve's point about depth and position, I suppose it's about the depth of quality in certain positions. So oftentimes in years gone by, you'd suggest that Scotland have the depth of a teaspoon in certain positions. Front row has traditionally been one that you look at over and over again. This is they've got a very short window to try and build that depth now. So they'll be chucking people in, they'll be blooding folk, and it helps that some of them are throwing their hands up in the Premiership. But I think that's the question marks in their mind. I think the style of play that they want with Gregor Townsend and Steve Tandy, they know now, because they've had a couple of Six Nations to give it a go. They know that they can challenge England and France when everything clicks. It's now just about safeguarding that, as it were, sort of building a wee fortress around it.
Oh, one of the best Scots players I've seen this year, and I've not seen them all, I've seen a fair few, is Matt Scott. Has he got a chance of coming back into the team? Because he is in absolutely outstanding form at the moment.
Yeah, and he's one of those where he's had exiles from the Scotland squad in the past, and he's wondered what it is that he's had to do. And he took a chance. He left Gloucester, came back to Scotland. It didn't quite work out for him, and then he went to Leicester. And hey, everything Leicester touch at the moment is turning into mauls and tries. That's not fair, actually. Everything they touch is turning to tries at the moment. They're playing phenomenally well, and he seems like a man in form. And thankfully, I mean, people have joked in the past about the Toonie Tombola, where test and squad selections seem to have come out of a spinning a box, or maybe even come out of a hat. Yeah. This is one of those where you can point to it and go, that is a reward for form. Whether he decides that that's the best option for a test, I'm not sure. I mean, we all hate about hearing from coaches, but you know, it's all about who puts their hands up in training, yada yada yada. But he's back in. He's got his feet under the table again. It's his to go, and certainly he's a man playing with confidence.
Scotland not the only team who are talking about the World Cup now in terms of squad selection and ambition. England, that was very much the tone of the England squad announcement last week, which we discussed. Eddie Jones leaving out, you know, the Vunipolos were free to come and join you for a beer at the East India Club because they're not in Jersey on the England camp. Eddie knows that if he's lit a fire underneath them and they come back the way he wants them to, then they'll be back in for that World Cup. But he's looking at alternatives. He's looking at new players. All the focus, certainly in the launch of the series this week with Owen Farrell, was his relationship with Marcus Smith, another player Eddie Jones wants to run the rule over in more competitive test matches than summer games against Canada and the USA. What do you think, Steve, of where England are heading into this autumn, of the squad selections, of the vision for the next few weeks?
Well, first of all, it is very accurate preparation for the World Cup. The one Eddie's playing for is the 2093 World Cup, when some of the players will have got out of nappies that he's chosen. Some of them may even have proven themselves to be any good, because there are about 10 there who have not remotely done anything than one played a few games as reserves in the Premiership. Now, what I think about it, Nick Dolly, God bless him, if he is a better player now or even in 2 years' time than Jamie George, I'll donate all my money to medical science. Because let's be fair, he doesn't have a policy picking this team. Okay, everyone is in there through a different policy. There is no policy there. He has really, really pissed off directors of rugby, really pissed off players, and it is not the time to do it. And then suddenly he's got to go back and say, oh, sorry, I was only toying with you. You're back in now. This thing about Farrell and Smith, all lovey-dovey, that is purely because Farrell clearly hated it when Danny Cipriani came alongside him, and they want to try and nip that in the bud, which tactically, I suppose, was right. Let's just wait till Marcus Smith has proved anything remotely like a World Cup winning outside half. Then we can shout about it. This team is weak, wrongly selected, and the person I saw who played last weekend, who played the best out of all these dummy-sucking youngsters that Eddie's put in 4 years too premature, was Mark Atkinson of Gloucester, 31. Not one of the dummy suckers. Really, really class player. Really played it well. All typical that completely by accident you should get in a player like that. I was at dinner with Billy and Mako Bunipola last night. Have to say, I never plucked up courage to go and speak to them because they looked just a little bit fierce.
You won't miss a beat from the Autumn Nation series, tuning into The Ruck every week and across the TalkSport network. The action starts with Scotland against Tonga this Saturday, followed by Wales against the All Blacks from 5 p.m. on TalkSport 2. Your top team will include Scotland's all-time record point scorer Chris Patterson and the former British and Irish Lion George North. The easiest way to listen is to download the TalkSport app and swipe. Tell your smart speaker to play TalkSport 2 or listen via DAB. And coming in November, TalkSport brings you England v South Africa and the Aussies. And with the men's Autumn Internationals teed up nicely, we throw over to Jess Hayden from The Times to have a look at a big week of news in the women's game.
After a quiet couple of weeks, we have an exciting week for women's rugby. Today, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, announced that the government will support the RFU's bid to host the 2025 Rugby World Cup. Sunak has announced £30 million of funding to prepare the bids to host the World Cup and the 2026 Tour de France Grand Depart as part of a wider pledge to support sporting events in the UK. The bid, which is due to be formally submitted in January, promises the biggest Women's Rugby World Cup ever, with matches around the country before a sellout final at Twickenham. But we are just 1 year away from the next World Cup now, and England have a crucial preparation match this Sunday as they face New Zealand at Sandy Park. This is the first of two tests against the Black Ferns for Simon Middleton's side this autumn, and it is the number one team in the world, England, versus the reigning Rugby World Cup champions, New Zealand. England will also face the USA and Canada this autumn. In other news, the Allianz Cup begins this weekend. This is a new cup competition for the Premier 15 set to take place during international windows to allow wider squad players more opportunities to play in the first team. The Premier 15 sides are split into two pools of five, and teams will play everyone in their pool once over five rounds. There are three rounds during the autumn break and two amid the Women's Six Nations before the finals in April next year. This weekend, DMP Durham Sharks face Harlequins, and Gloucester Hartbury play Bristol Bears in a West Country derby. In Pool B, Worcester Warriors face Saracens and Sale Sharks play Loughborough Lightning.
So it was a big week for women's rugby in England and a big month to come, Al.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jess mentioned there the World Cup bid, and it's significant. We're in the middle of the week here. We're slap bang in the middle of the week, so we're away to get Rishi Sunak's budget, but bits of it have been leaked out beforehand. And one of the things that's been talked about is a big pot of cash, $30 million, being split across a grand depart for the Tour de France in 2026, but also the bid for the England. They're going to give some money to the England Women's World Cup bid and to have it played over here. Now that is a significant thing. These big games, and it is a big month for England women, playing against starting off with the two games against the All Blacks, playing at the Sandy Park. That's also going to be on BBC Two. You know, all the England women's games are going to be on a free to air prime time terrestrial television. So, a phenomenal shop window for that event, and you couldn't ask for a better team to play against to show people the best of women's test rugby, really.
Right, look, it's wonderful. I have to say that you feel a slight sorrow for the other countries who are working hard but haven't got the numbers or the strength or the finance. But I really do think that the next World Cup could be colossal in England. I just wonder, would they, I don't know what Al thinks, would they make the mistake that for the best reasons that the old World Cup in men's used to make, would they just give a couple of games to Cardiff, Dublin and Murrayfield just to share in it? I don't know. That you do sometimes lose structure and you lose the impact there. But it's terrific. Really looking forward to these live games on the BBC. And I know the girls I coach have all got their players to watch with them. You know, watch their six or watch their 14 and all that. So it'll be sensational. I guess I would make a distinction between England going for the men's World Cup very soon after the last one. I just don't think that is what they should have done, and I don't think that they should get that World Cup with respect to them. But this one, England Rugby World Cup, as Al says, as you say, guys, financial investment as well. Well, that's tremendous. And could be just another great leap forward.
And certainly people want to see how England fare against the Black Ferns here, because it's a good yardstick. Remember, we're not so far away from the World Cup taking place in New Zealand next year as well. So, you know, there's a lot at stake. It's a good measuring stick, to, or at least good way of knowing what you're up against with the best in the world heading towards a major event.
And I think looking at 2025... Steve, to answer your question, there was no mention in the bid announcement of taking a game outside of England, although there was a lot of commentary around the benefits, the wider benefits that they believe can be had in terms of participation and coach development in Scotland and Wales from having the competition here. But I think if you cast your mind back to the last time England hosted a Women's World Cup in 2010, when England lost the final to New Zealand, the final and the semi-finals were at the Twickenham Stoop. And all the pool matches were played at Surrey Sports Park, you know, the University of Surrey, Guildford, on those pitches there. This bid is to make it a nationwide event, to have pool matches played around the country, to sell out Twickenham for the final, 82,000 people. That ambition alone shows just how far and how quickly women's rugby is developing as a sport in this country. And there was a line in my conversation with Chris Robshaw last week, where he was talking about some of the community service that he's had to go and do as a result of his Barbarians misdemeanor, which has long been completed, and he's enjoyed it so much he's still going and visiting clubs. But he said he went and coached an under-13s team and asked the girls, do you want to play for England one day? And one of the girls said, no, I want to play for the Red Roses. And that alone, as one snapshot example, shows the impact that the women's team is having, and to Al's point, can make an even greater mark over the next month live on the BBC. Okay, it is time. The time has come, gents, for our weekly God or Goddess of the Feature. The time has come for our weekly God or Goddess of the Week feature. Al, you look exciting. I'll throw it to you first.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's weekly, so that in no way do we forget about this every single episode and are scrambling around. So I will possibly be throwing to a piece of it for Rugby World last night. I had a really interesting chat with Timothy Jim Nagusa, former Fijian winger, who's playing out in France, and it's created a lot of headlines in France about parental leave for professional athletes. He's decided to take paternity leave. He's informed his club that he'll be taking it, even though they've asked him to come back and play. He hasn't played a game yet for Grenoble, but he has said, I'm entitled by French law to 27 days of paternity leave. My wife is struggling. We've got a newborn. We've got a 13-month-old. I will be helping out of the house, and that's where is best use of my headspace. And even if wherever you stand on that, even if it's just to generate a debate about this, I think that that's a very and it's an incredible thing. We need to be talking about stuff like this. I've spoken to some people who have said, you know, tear down stigma about stuff like leave and asking for help or doing that kind of thing. So certainly, if only just for a conversation starter, I'm very glad of it.
Good shout, Steve. Have you got a nomination?
I have got a nomination. It's not. It wouldn't be a dramatic plucked out the air, but I worked with Floyd Steadman with his book and Ed Griffiths. Floyd Steadman was a guy who played 460 odd times to Saracens, and actually had his book launched last night. A lot of us were saying, Jesus, I had no idea what happened to Floyd in the rest of his life, which was absolutely dreadful, tragic, but also triumphant. So Floyd Steadman's the book. The book is worth looking at. I don't hold any commercial consideration in that at all. So my God of the Week is Floyd Steadman.
Steve, were you at a celebrity party last night? You hadn't mentioned it. I don't know.
No, did I mention it a few times? Well, I was at a celebrity party, yeah. But other people of less status than I weren't allowed in. But I was in there and it was tremendous.
Steve, I don't think I can come up with a nomination that would beat either of those two. They can get joint
absolute cop out. This.
Hang on, you've got to find killer.
No,
somewhere.
I don't. I'm in the chairman seat today. I'm going to award. No, there's no way that anyone's going to beat either of those two nominations. So, gents, thank you, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back on the usual day next week to pick the bones out of Wales, New Zealand, and look ahead to England's first game. Please keep listening. Please subscribe, like, do whatever it is you need to do on your normal podcast provider, and we'll see you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.